Hello and welcome to episode 79 of Books by Old Dead Guys. I'm Scott.
And I'm David.
And we are your hosts as we navigate books, well, by old dead guys. Puritan works, mostly time spent examining these books that have been forgotten by some, but contain so much good truth that we want to be sure we're bringing it out. And so we are working through together a book called Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices by Thomas Brooks. And we are 140 pages into this book, which is past the halfway point now. And he has been reminding us of different devices that the enemy uses to keep us away from the Lord, to keep us from spiritual growth, and in some cases even to keep us away from salvation. So David, where are we very specifically now?
Yeah, so we've been moving through a section that Brooks is talking through ways that Satan tries to keep us from holy duties, ways he tries to keep us from doing the things that we ought to do as believers. And so the device that we started last time, and we'll continue to look at the remedies for today, is that Satan comes to us and he shows us other believers and he says, look at how poor and how meager and how, you know, just low and lowly and poor and humble these people are. Look, they're not much to look at. Look at these people that do all these things. They're really not all that much to look at, aren't they? And that's kind of the device that Satan tries to get us, uses to try to get us to put off the things that we ought to do, by looking at other believers and seeing them as poor and lowly and despised. And so we've been working through some remedies, and we'll continue to work through some remedies against this device of Satan. So, Scott, why don't you take us away?
You got it. Remedy 5. The fifth remedy against this device of Satan is, seriously to consider, that it will be but as a day before these poor despised saints shall shine brighter than the sun in his glory. It will not be long before you will wish, oh, that we were now among the poor, mean, despised ones in the day that God comes to make up his jewels. It will not be long before these poor few saints shall be lifted up upon their thrones to judge the multitude, the world, as the apostle speaks. Know ye not that the saints shall judge the world? 1 Corinthians 6:2. And in that day, oh, how will the great and the rich, the learned and the noble wish that they had lived and spent their days with these few poor, contemptible creatures in the service of the Lord. Oh, how will this wicked world curse the day that ever they had such base thoughts of the poor, mean saints, and that their poverty became a stumbling block to keep them off from the ways of sanctity. I have read of Ingo, an ancient king of the Draves, who, making a stately feast, appointed his nobles, at that time pagans, to sit in the hall below, and commanded certain poor Christians to be brought up into his presence chamber, so sit with him at the table, to eat and drink of his kingly cheer, at which, many wondering, he said, he accounted Christians, though never so poor, a greater ornament to his table, and more worthy of his company than the greatest peers unconverted to the Christian faith. For when these might be thrust down to hell, those might be his consorts and fellow princes in heaven. You know how to apply it. Although you see the stars sometimes by their reflections in a puddle or in the bottom of a well, aye, in a stinking ditch, yet the stars have their situation in heaven. So though you see a godly man in a poor, miserable, low, despised condition for the things of this world, yet he is fixed in heaven, in the region of heaven, who hath raised us up, said the apostle, and made us sit together in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. Oh, therefore, say to your own souls, would they begin to decline the ways of Sion because of the poverty and paucity of those that walk in them? The day is at hand when those few poor despised saints shall shine in glory, when they shall judge this world, and when all the wicked of this world will wish that they were in their condition, and would give 10,000 worlds, as it were, in their power, that they might but have the honor and happiness to wait upon those whom for their poverty and paucity they have neglected and despised in this world.
So remedy 5 is just you wait. Just you wait until the Lord reveals how he is going to glorify his saints. When you see these people that look to be poor and despised in this world, when you see them in the next world, they will not be poor and despised.
You know, it reminds me of Jesus' parable of the rich man and Lazarus, right? You know, that the rich man had everything and looked like he had it all together here on this world. But then when all things came to an end, it was the poor man who, you know, who's, was it the dog licked the poor man's sores that he was seated at Abraham's bosom. And it was the rich man who saw what true wealth was. And you know, it's such a clue. You know, we have this, there's this hyperbole that happens in Christian speaking circles that's unhelpful. You'll hear sometimes guys introduced as, this is the premier evangelist in the world. Nobody evangelizes like this guy. Or this is the great, you know, he knows more about the Bible than anyone I know. Or he knows more about the Bible than anyone, which is even worse. You know, I think the reality of the fact is, man, when we get to heaven, the people who really are the greatest evangelists, the people who really are the mature Christians, the people who really are those who have such a depth of knowledge about the scriptures, we're probably not even ever have heard these people.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's by design, right? He who is the least in this world will be greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Like that's by design. And so, yeah, wait and see. Because our kingdom is not with Jesus. My kingdom is not of this world. Mm-hmm. You know, and so because his kingdom is not of this world, we are not of this world. We're not chasing those things. Yeah, it's good. All right, remedy six. The sixth remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider that there will come a time, even in this life, in this world, when the reproach and contempt that is now cast upon the ways of God by reason of the poverty and paucity of those that walk in these ways shall be quite taken away by his making them head that have days without number been the tail, and by his raising them up to much outward riches, prosperity, and glory who have been as the outcast because of their poverty and paucity. John, speaking of the glory of the church, the new Jerusalem that came down from heaven, tells us that the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it. And the kings of the earth do bring their glory into it. So the prophet Isaiah, they shall bring their sons from far, and their silver and their gold with them. For brass I will bring gold. And for iron I will bring silver, and for wood brass, and for stones iron. Isaiah 60, verse 17. And so the prophet Zechariah speaks in Zechariah 14, 14. And the wealth of all the heathen round shall be gathered together, gold and silver and apparel in great abundance. The Lord hath promised that the meek shall inherit the earth, and heaven and earth shall pass away before one jot or one tittle of his word shall pass unfulfilled. Ah, poor saints! Now some thrust sore at you, others look askant upon you, others shut the door against you, others turn their backs upon you, and most of men, except it be a few that live much in God and are filled with the riches of Christ, do either neglect you or despise you because of your poverty. But the day is coming when you shall be lifted up above the dunghill, when you shall change poverty for riches, your rags for robes, your reproach for a crown of honor, your infamy for glory, even in this world. And this is not all, but God will also mightily increase the number of his chosen ones. Multitudes shall be converted to him. Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such things? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day, or shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Sion travailed, she brought forth children. And they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Lord out of all the nations, upon horses and in chariots, in litters and upon mules and upon swift beasts, to my holy mountain Jerusalem, saith the Lord, as the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel unto the house of the Lord. In Isaiah 66, verse 8 and 20, doth not the scripture say that the kingdoms of this world must become the kingdoms of our Lord in Revelation 11, 15? Hath not God given to Christ the heathen and the uttermost parts of the earth for his possession? In Psalm 2, 8, hath not the Lord said that in the last days the mountains of the Lord's house shall be lifted up above the hills and shall be established in the top of the mountains, and all the nations shall flow unto it? In Isaiah 2, 2 and 54, 14 and 61, 9, pray, read, and meditate upon Isaiah 60 and 66 and 21:5, and there you shall find the multitudes that shall be converted to Christ. And oh, that you would be mighty in believing and wrestling with God, that you would hasten the day of his glory, that the reproach that is now upon his people and his ways may cease.
So remedy six is God often humbles the proud, but he also often exalts the humble. That it is in God's good pleasure to raise up those of lowly estate for his glory. Yeah. I mean, you think about the story of Joseph, right? Mm-hmm. That he, by his brother's act against him, was sold as a slave, by betrayal of Potiphar's wife, was thrown into prison. You know, he's at the lowest of the low.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a prisoner in a land that is not his own.
Right.
He's a prisoner in a foreign country. You know, how much lower can you get? And yet God, in his good pleasure, uses that time in the dungeon, in the prison, to exalt him to be second in command of all of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh himself, that he goes from this lowest of position to the highest position in all the land. And God takes pleasure in doing that.
Yeah.
He takes pleasure in bringing himself glory by using those of humble estate and exalting them, not just in the next life, but in this one as well.
Well, you think about, you know, we're preaching through Exodus right now, right? God took a nation of slaves and made them into a nation of people, the only people in the world who would bear the name of the Lord to show the world who God is, right? That they would become, they are his children. He calls them his firstborn son, right? And this is the lowliest of the low, exalted by God at the right time, right? It's the passage, humble yourselves therefore before the mighty hand of God, and at the right time he will exalt you. The right time is almost rare, is almost never while our hearts beat, right? The right time is after sin has been the final blow against sin has been struck, and we are in heaven, or the new heavens and the new earth, and our bodies are recreated, and we're with him now, because we can actually do something good with the exaltation that the Lord gives. Right now, there's too much temptation, right? It's just too easy to become arrogant or haughty at that. And sometimes I think the Lord does that, but I rarely have seen that. That at the right time he will exalt you. And I think that's what Brooks is getting at. You know, when you said, man, just wait.
You'll see it one day.
Just a little while longer.
Mm-hmm.
But it will happen and it'll be phenomenal. And he says this at the beginning of this particular device, it will be eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Like the exaltation that you get, the glory of Christ will be an eternal thing in you. The reigning with Christ will be an eternal thing with you. And that is so much better than any of the ways that we're tempted to judge people and things here. So, yep. The next device is only 3 pages long.
Oh, really?
And it only has 2-3 remedies. He must have had a hard day that day. It must have been a busy day in the ministry of Thomas Brooks, because we only got one device with 3 pages. So here we go. Device 6. By presenting before them, this is what the enemy does, by presenting before them the examples of the greatest part of the world that walk in the ways of their own hearts, that make light and slight of the ways of the Lord. Why, saith Satan, do you not see that the great and the rich, the noble and the honorable, the learned and the wise, even the greatest number of men, never trouble themselves about such and such ways? And why then should you be singular and nice? You were far better do as the most do.
Yeah, so Satan puts before us all these folks who the world views as great and rich and noble and high and worthy to be praised, and says, well, all these people that the world looks up to, they don't do these things. Mm-hmm. So why should you have to do them?
Peer pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
None of these other people that have made themselves so well in this world, they don't bother themselves with these things.
So why should you?
Why should you?
Let's see what he has to say about this. Remedy one, the first remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider of those scriptures that make directly against following the sinful examples of men. As that in Exodus, thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. Neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment. Chapter 23, verse 2. The multitude generally are ignorant and know not the way of the Lord. Therefore, they speak evil of that they know not. They are envious and maliciously bent against the service and the way of God, and therefore they cannot speak well of the ways of God. This way is everywhere spoken against, saith they. So in Numbers 16:21, separate from them and come out from among them. So the apostle, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, in Ephesians 5:11. So Solomon, enter not into the way of the wicked, forsake the foolish and live. Proverbs 4:14 and 9:6. They that walk with the most shall perish with the most. They that do as the most shall ere long suffer with the most. They that live as the most must die with the most and to hell with the most.
So his first remedy is, man, if you're looking at what most people think about what is good and worthy of praise, then you will find that most people are entirely ignorant. That most people are going in the entirely wrong direction, and most people will find themselves in hell.
And it's such a shocking truth to realize this, right? Like, the longer you walk with the Lord, the more you see this. Because I think the more you're conformed to the image of Christ as you walk with the Lord, the more you see other people for what they really are. Mm-hmm. You know, so as a young man, I spent most of my life trying to figure out who I wanted to be like. And as you grow older, you watch these people that you thought, I really wanted to be like that guy. You watch their lives just tank. Mm-hmm. And the common factor in most of those lives is they lived like most. Mm-hmm. You know, that if you live like the rabble, you'll get what the rabble gets. It's when Jesus says the way is narrow. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
wide is the path that leads to destruction.
Exactly. And so that's what he's saying. Just remember. Just wait to appropriate your quote in an entirely different context.
Just wait.
All right. Remedy two. The second remedy against this device of Satan is seriously to consider that if you will sin with the multitude, all the angels in heaven and men on earth cannot keep you from suffering with the multitude. Oh, if you will be wicked with them, you must unavoidably be miserable with them. Say to thy soul, O my soul, if thou wilt sin with the multitude, thou must be shut out of heaven with the multitude. Thou must be cast down to hell with the multitude. And I heard a voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues, in Revelation 18:4. Come out in affection, in action, and in habitation, for else the infection of sin will bring upon you the infliction of punishment. So saith the wise man, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Or as the Hebrew hath it, shall be broken in pieces. Multitudes may help thee into sin, yea, one may draw thee into sin, but it is not the multitudes that can help thee to escape punishments, as you may see in Moses and Aaron that were provoked to sin by the multitude, but were shut out of the pleasant land and fell by hand of justice as well as others.
Mm. I love that phrase. If you sin with the multitude, you will bear the punishment with the multitude.
That's right.
If you sin with most people, you will face the consequences with most people. A majority of peer pressure could be fought against with that phrase. Absolutely. If you think, well, so-and-so is doing it, well, do you want to bear the consequences that so-and-so is going to bear?
That's exactly right. If you do what they do, you'll get what they get.
They'll get what they get.
All right, one more. Remedy three. The third remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider the worth and excellency of thy immortal soul. Thy soul is a jewel worth more than heaven and earth. The loss of thy soul is incomparable, irreparable, and irrecoverable. If that be lost, all is lost, and thou art undone forever. It is madness and folly in a man to kill himself for company. And is it not greater madness or folly to break the neck of thy soul, to damn it for company? Suspect that way wherein thou seest multitudes to walk, the multitude being a stream that thou must row hard against, or thou wilt be carried into that gulf out into which the angels cannot deliver thee. Is it not better to walk in a straight way alone than to wander into crooked ways with company? Sure, it is better to go to heaven alone than to hell with other company. I might add other things, but these may suffice for the present, and I'm afraid if these arguments do not stir you, other arguments will work but little upon you.
I love that last couple of sentences of, I could say more here.
But I'm not going to.
But I don't feel like I need to.
If this didn't do it.
Nothing will. Yeah. But yeah, his last remedy. Consider how precious your soul is. That you ought not take these kinds of chances with your soul.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Which is the call for all of us, right? Everything we do, somehow or the other, is truly an investment in our soul. It's how Paul could say in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether then you eat or you drink or whatever you do, do all things to the glory of God, right? Everything we do is an investment into our spiritual life. There is no distinction between the spiritual and the secular. There's no distinction between the spiritual and the physical. The way you work is a reflection of the investment that you're making into your soul. The way you handle your recreation is a reflection of the investment that you're making into your soul. Like, it's all spiritual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all spiritual. And when you recognize that, then it does make your life different. And it makes you move in a different way. So, helpful. Well, friends, thank you for listening today. We've had a great time doing this. Hope that you've gained and benefited from it as well. If you would, share it with a friend. Tell them what we're trying to do here. We want to put good books into the hands of people who want to be conformed to the image of Christ. And so, it's been a blessing to you. Share it with others. We will talk again soon.
Goodbye.